ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Now to Guerrier. Looking to turn on it. He's done beautifully. Looking to cut it back in. It's there to be hit. Bang shoots and scores! Bang scores! What might be the winner and what might be the goal that puts the Socceroos through to the 2026 World Cup in the 90th minute?
We asked during the week who might be the hero for the Socceroos. Azeez Bajic is the answer. Australia's off to a sixth straight World Cup. We are going to luxuriate in that victory in a moment with Mark Bosnich. In the beautiful game, fans are on cloud nine in Tasmania. The Devils are feeling like hell. Politics mixed with sport and everyone got burned. What happens next for the AFL team? We've got a touch of Aussie rules, a dash of NRL and a dollop of soundbites too. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Socceroos picks a great time to break their win drought over Japan, the first victory over the Samurai Blue since 09, and it sees the Australians all but into the next World Cup. Mark Bosnich, footballing royalty, is here to break it down. Boz.
Thanks for that introduction, Stacky. I really appreciate it.
When you think about qualification heroes, Aloisi, Schwarzer, Kennedy, those are the names. The unheralded Azeez Bajic joins them. Why do those in football circles love this player? What's the kind of the story behind the goal almost?
Well, another one to add to that as well, Andrew Redmayne, of course. The story behind it goes that back in 2010, there was an A-League Grand Final, and he'd come on as a young boy, substitute, right towards the end of full time of extra time, and missed a really gilt-edged chance. Like, I'll be nice to him, yeah? And then Melbourne Victory ended up losing on penalties. So for him to score that goal, it must have been absolutely phenomenal for him.
You know, I just tried to get myself into that back post area. And, look, as soon as it sat and it's come off my foot, I felt it hit pretty nicely. I actually didn't see the ball actually hit the net. I just kind of saw the crowd erupt and players start running everywhere. And that's when I looked at the goal. I'm like, oh, let's go. It's a beautiful moment.
Very much well-liked. You know, always wears his heart on the sleeve. And it's been a tremendous servant for the Socceroos. And like you said, look, they suffered a great deal during that game last night. But two things. Number one, first and foremost, from the Japanese perspective, as good as you play in between the boxes, you got to finish off moves. It's no good looking outstanding, you know, in between the boxes if you don't finish off the moves.
I'll win it back again here, Japan. And a long-range shot flies across the face of Ryan's goal. That was not far away.
And the second thing is congratulations to the Socceroos. Not many teams would have stayed in that fight. Many teams would have just sort of said, oh, we're just getting slaughtered here. We're just going to lay down. They did. They stayed in the fight. It's a very, very important thing in our sport because goals are at a premium. So they stayed in the fight. And in the end, you always normally get at least one chance. And they did, and they took it.
Well, that's a lovely turn by Riley McGree. The cutback. They're queuing up here. It's Bajic. Unbelievable.
Wonderful strike. Right foot as well.
You talk about staying in the fight, and yeah. I think Tony Popovich probably deserves a lot of credit for that. We heard his players
He's
talk
done that
about
before,
that.
Hasn't he, too?
Yeah.
With the Wanderers, remember?
Yeah.
When they won the Asian Champions League?
I think we've heard a lot of the players talk about how he's got them playing for the badge, playing for the shirt.
Yeah.
The question is now how he evolves what has been, you know, a team full of dogs ready to fight for a team that can evolve for the World Cup.
That's going to be so difficult in such a short space of time. Basically, a little like Japan. And Japan are now just looking for the icing on the cake to finish off basically everything that they started back in the 90s. To play in that type of way that Japan did, that takes time. Okay, you need to start that now with young players who are 6, 7, and 8. My young boys around that age, that's what they're trying to instill, that type of thing, players with a difference. You know, not so many players who basically physically are okay, but from a technical point of view, like you saw last night in the Japanese, their first touch and their techniques on a pitch that was like an ice skating rink was absolutely phenomenal.
Now they come down the left-hand side. This is a good run. They're still surging forward, and a shot at goal just misses by Suzuki.
Like I said, all that was missing was the finishing touch. That needs to start now. You know, Tony Popovich is going to be very careful because if he goes to try to play that type of style now with the players at his disposal because they're not suited to that style, they could get heavily beat. So they've got to be very careful. I think the best thing advice I will give them is to approach every game individually, i.e. if you're coming up against Spain, Japan, people like that, be a little bit more conservative. I think you're mad if you're not. But if you're not, go and express yourself. Out of 211 nations that play the game of football, we'd still be, I think, in the top 30. Just pick and choose your games and how you play. You know that you can do it. Although a lot of people will say Japan had scored early would have been completely different. It is true, but they didn't. And at the end of the day, it resulted in our first win in, I think, 16 years, you said?
Still got to get past Saudi Arabia. I'm a little bit ahead of ourselves. 5-0 would see the Socceroos eliminated. So they just don't
concede. Well, not eliminated, but they'll go to the fourth round of qualifying.
Go to the next round. Just can't concede a heck of a lot of goals. I just want to understand mentally, how do you approach that kind of game then?
Oh, you just got to go out to play your normal game as best you possibly can. Because, like I said, we have, you know, these wonderful moments these days on our phones on YouTube. And they say, watch this from years ago. You know, this team had to win 5-0. I said, you don't want to be on YouTube for the next 30 years saying, just watch this, right? Same thing. So you just got to go out and make sure, even if they go a couple of goals down, just to stay. Because there's going to be a raucous atmosphere. If they get ahead of wind up, you just got to be a little bit careful. It doesn't get away from you. Look, it can happen. So you just got to be a little bit careful. It's all right for us. We can say, but it is. They're virtually there, but they've got to make sure and just do a professional job.
Can't wait to see how we go in Saudi Arabia. A World Cup beckons. Mark Bosnich, thanks for breaking it all down for us. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Stacky. Anytime.
Chris Rowbottom is the Tassie correspondent for ABC Sport. As you'd imagine, he has ridden the roller coaster that is the new AFL team / new stadium / political upheaval story. It's been raging for a while, but when it results in the dissolving of Parliament, you know we're at a flashpoint. Chris, let's pick up from the successful no confidence motion. What happens now politically? Because it informs what happens from a stadium and team perspective.
Yeah, it certainly does. So as we sit here today, it appears the most likely outcome will be that Tasmania goes to the polls, a new election, you know, just over a year since we had the last one. And the ramifications there for the football team and the stadium is that, you know, we were due to have a vote through the parliament in about 4 to 6 weeks' time that, if it was passed, would have essentially greenlit the stadium and given it planning approval to be built. And everything regarding the team would have flowed on from that. So the result of going to an election now means that the parliament will be dissolved and that vote now won't happen. And best case, that'll be pushed back by, you know, an amount of time. How long that is, we don't know, but it will be pushed back. And that will throw out already really tight timelines. The other factor, which we can get into a bit deeper, is the potential makeup of a future parliament after an election, what that looks like, and how either of the major parties are able to hang on to their support of a stadium while also forming a government potentially with crossbenchers or the Greens.
One thing we can say for certain, I think, is there's great uncertainty. And I've seen the sort of headlines thrown around, team in jeopardy, Tassie Devils on a knife edge. How real is that sense of jeopardy around the AFL's potential 19th franchise?
I think the jeopardy, there was definitely a feeling within the club earlier this week that if we went to an election, then it was grave danger, because the fear was that timelines were going to be blown out to such an extent that the agreement with the AFL and the 18 club presidents was going to be voided. And then the second big fear, as I mentioned, was that potential makeup of parliament and the stadium, which is so divisive here in Tasmania, surviving another election and surviving a new makeup of parliament, which, you know, from the club's eyes, look to be a really low chance. Now, things have come back from the ledge a little bit since then, because both of the major parties have again pledged and reiterated their support for the stadium and the team. And that means that there could be a situation where after an election, if there's a hung parliament where one of those major parties needs to form with crossbenchers or the Greens, and they stick and hold onto that support for the stadium, it might force those crossbenchers and or the Greens to form a government with them without having to give up the stadium, because one of those two parties will be in government, and if they're both supporting the stadium, that means either way the stadium will live. But as soon as one of them blinks and drops support, that will be the one that probably forms government. So it will be all about resisting that temptation and trusting your political rival on the other side of the house to keep their end of the bargain and keep their word that they will also support the stadium.
We've heard from lots of people within the AFL ecosystem. Brendan Gale at the Tassie Devils, Cathy McCann from the club as well, Chris Fagan, a big Tasmanian person who's obviously coaching at the Brisbane Lions. And the consensus view, I think, in AFL circles is we can't allow this moment to slip through our fingers. But I want to get a sense from you, someone who is entrenched in the Tasmanian sports ecosystem. Do Tasmanians universally want this to get up and go ahead?
Tasmanians universally want a Tasmanian Devils football club playing in the AFL, the big bone of contention amongst Tasmanians is the stadium and the requirement to have the stadium. And it's not sitting well with the majority of Tasmanians that they, or that the state, will have to build this stadium in order for the Devils to survive. There is this conception that Tasmania can survive playing out of its current two home grounds. But I think there is a disconnect where people see North Melbourne and Hawthorn playing at Hobart and Launceston and equate that to a Tassie Devils team being able to do the same thing. What they don't realise is that North Melbourne's home ground isn't Belrive, it's Docklands, where they have 50,000 seats and they can draw big crowds. And Hawthorn's home ground isn't York Park, it's the MCG, which is where they draw all of their revenue from. Tasmania won't be able to base itself or sustain itself out of a 12,000-seater, which is Belrive Oval, because the club has to be based in Hobart. Therefore, it needs to build something new. It can't expand Belrive or develop it because it's stuck in the middle of a suburb and has nothing around it except for people's homes. Launceston and York Park is great, but it's in Launceston, and that's not the capital of the state. It's not the population capital of the state. It's not the, you know, the education capital, the health capital, the political capital, the media capital, all of those things that players and their families are going to want to have. So all roads lead to having to build something new that is befitting of an AFL club, and that an AFL club is able to draw revenue from and base its financial case upon.
I'm asking a lot of you here, but as someone who has ridden this story from go to woe, how do you see this one playing out to the best of your forecasting ability?
Yeah, so if we end up at an election, which looks like the most likely option at this stage, I think the result of that election will be a hung parliament. Therefore, one of those parties, or both of them, is going to have to attempt to form a government with the crossbench or the Greens. Now, currently, the crossbench and the Greens, mostly so, are against the stadium. Where things can be good for the Devils in the stadium is that if both of those parties maintain their support for the stadium, therefore creating the situation where the crossbench and slash Greens are forced into picking either a Liberal Party with a stadium or a Labor Party with a stadium to form a government with. Where it all falls over is if one of those parties decides to flip and say, we're going to drop the stadium in exchange for the support of the crossbench slash the Greens.
It's fascinating right now. The stakes couldn't be higher. Chris Rowbottom, thanks for pulling it all apart for us. Appreciate it.
Nah, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Okay, quick heads up to remind you, every game of AFL, NRL this weekend live on the ABC Listen app. Both codes have a heavy emphasis on the Kings' birthday clash Monday. The AFL is all about the Neil Danaher-inspired big freeze as the Ds try to stop a rampant Collingwood. In the NRL, Lachlan Galvin has been named on an extended Canterbury bench as they prepare to face Parramatta. Oh, did we mention ex-Kangaroos and Maroons coach Mal Meninga has been confirmed as the new coach of the Bears in Perth. Big round of footy and footy talk incoming. Soundbites. Game one of the NBA Finals Series has finished in quite frankly insane fashion. The Pacers were 15 points down in the last quarter, trimmed the margin to two, and just let Tyrese Halliburton go to work.
No fouls to give. Halliburton looking. Halliburton driving. Pulls off. Jump shot. It's good! It's good! With 0.3 seconds remaining. Timeout, OKC. Tyrese Halliburton does it again.
How do the Pacers star see the comeback?
Man, basketball's fun, man. Winning is fun. That's a great win for us.
No kidding. You know what else would be fun? Going to Mykonos for a holiday, having a boogie to DJ Dom Dollar. He's spinning away, and you look up and you see that actually working alongside him, Robert DiPadomenico.
Dipper, how did you get on stage with Dom Dollar?
Well, I was in Mykonos, and Dom was playing in Mykonos, and then he found out that I was there, and he asked me to come and play.
It's not all fun and games. Mercedes Formula One boss Toto Wolff is not having as good of a time.
Well, it's the end of a busy triple header, though. What do you take away from these last three races?
Suffering on a sport level, you know, not just suffering.
The Big Bad Wolf is doing it tough. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Channel 10, ESPN, the Hawthorn Football Club and F1 for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.